That's right, everybody. Don't let your mama into the room. Don't let your little sister in here. You just sit down, get ready for Kalina and Saylet. They're reading dirty books. Shh. We're reading dirty books.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Saylet.
And I'm Kalina.
And we're here to talk to you about The Darkest Kiss, the second book in the series of The Lords of the Underworld. And just so you guys know, we are on a road trip.
Yes.
We're going camping right now. Kalina and I are in her car.
We're driving through the mountains as we speak. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful Colorado.
Yep. And it's raining, so you might hear the raindrops.
Or a sporadic traffic incident.
Yes. You might hear us go, oh shit. Oh look, there's a deer. Yeah. Oh Dan, stop driving so fast. So thank you for joining us back. So we're excited to get into this
story. So this time we read The Darkest Kiss, and this is the book about Lucien and Anya. So, it's the first book was about Maddox and Ashlyn. Well, this is Lucien and Anya's book. Lucien is the Lord of Death. He houses the Demon of Death inside him. He was the captain of the guard back when they were the immortal lords before they opened Pandora's box. Anya is the goddess of anarchy. She was born to Dysnomia, the goddess of lawlessness. Dysnomia has a pretty bad reputation among the gods, and so they were, both her and her daughter were treated pretty poorly. She sleeps with a lot of married gods, and that's caused kind of strife for them up in the heavens or up on Mount Olympus. So growing up was hard for Anya. She was always accused of being like her mother. And then as a child, she found out who her father was. She was crying one day over the way they were treating her, and Themis, the goddess of justice, sees her and stops. She immediately recognizes that this girl is her husband's daughter, and her husband is Tartarus. He's the lord of the jail, the Tartarus jail, where they keep all of the titans at the time. So Themis curses Anya so that if she ever falls in love and accepts a man inside of her, then she is bound to him forever. She loses her free will to him. If he casts her off and goes and finds, another love, it doesn't matter. She can't turn away. She will be bound to him forever.
And by inside of her, we mean penetration.
Yes. Yes. That's what...
The P in the V.
That's the true, very literal definition of the curse. So Anya immediately begins training and learning to defend herself so she can protect herself, because she knows that with this hanging over her head, she's going to have a hard time. Luckily, no one knows about the curse. Her mom and Themis are really the only people that know. And so she keeps it a secret. She ends up... So the new Lord of the Guards, Ari or something, I don't know, I forgot his name by now, he tries to rape her one day, and she's not having any of that, so she kills him. She cuts his heart out, and as punishment, they put her in prison in Tartarus, and then they try to devise...
Go, okay. You can do it! It's Emily that we don't know.
Oh, we don't know about Emily.
Oh shit.
Okay. Sorry. We had a merging incident. Okay. We're all fine. Everyone's fine. Okay. Everybody merged. All
right. We're in a three-car convoy. So that's going to happen throughout this talk, just so you guys know.
So she's in Tartarus. The gods are figuring out what they're going to do as punishment for her, and they decide to make her a sex slave to the warriors. And, that's a pretty crushing...
Pretty fucked up.
Pretty fucked up. That's a really bad punishment for murdering a guy who's trying to rape you. I feel like it's really unfair. And on top of it, she's got this curse that means the minute that happens, she's going to lose her will and her freedom to the first person they give her to. So that sucks. Luckily, her father, Tartarus, is the lord of the prison, and he finds out what they're going to do. He knows about the curse, and he goes, no, and he's going to let her out. He gives her what is called the All Key. It is what makes him powerful. It's what allows him to run the prison and be, you know, keep everyone locked up. And by giving it away, he loses his memory, he loses his mind, he loses himself, and all of his powers. He pretty much starts withering away, but now Anya has it. She cannot be held. She can get out of any chains, any prison, any locks. Nothing can bind her. People can't bind her. And she can flash. She can move from place to place whenever she wishes. So she has the key. Once Tartarus gives it up, the prison starts to crumble. It becomes weak. That's why the Titans escaped in the last book. The Titans are out. They lock up Zeus and the Greeks. Cronus does, because he's mad that the Greeks locked him up in the first place. He's a real power-hungry, crazy man. But he's out. Now that he's out, he has a certain number of things he wants to gather. He has powerful objects he needs to retain, find. They were his power pieces back when he was the head hot guy before he got locked up. So there's a cage, a rod, a cloak, and an all-seeing eye. So he's trying to find those. He also wants to get the key from Anya. Anya wants to keep the key, and she doesn't want to get killed by Lucien. Cronus goes to Lucien and says, I need you to kill Anya. She's wild and untamable, and I just want you to kill her. Lucien doesn't understand why he's being asked to do this. He's actually indebted to Anya for the favor she provided to them in the previous book, where she helped them break Maddox's death curse. Mm-hmm. So now we've set up the book. There's all of this, you know, torture between Anya and Lucien because they're starting to fall in love with each other. They're hanging out all the time. They're chasing each other. He's trying to kill her, but he doesn't really want to kill her because he likes her. She's trying to, just flirt with him, but also find out what he knows about the stuff that Cronus is looking for, because if they can find something that Cronus wants, maybe they can trade it for not killing Anya. He doesn't, Lucien doesn't know what the key is. He's trying to figure that out. Anya's trying to keep that information from him. So the whole book is just a long chase scene of them, chasing each other. And every time they catch each other, they fight a little bit, which turns into a little bit of sex. Maybe just a little bit at first, and then they go a little further. And so that's basically the story of the book. By the end of the book, they get together. They defeat Cronus a little bit. They trick him a bit, but Anya does have to give up the All Key. I'm just never going to catch him. She does have to give it up to save Lucien. He's about to die. And Cronus says, if you give me the key, I'll save him. But they get to keep the cage. They found this cage of compulsion. They defeated a Hydra. They found, a map. So they're looking for the other objects. The other lords are doing this stuff while Anya and Lucien are falling in love and fighting all around the world. And that's pretty much, we leave it off with them having solved their most immediate problems. They broke Anya's curse basically by going all the way and fulfilling it, but mm-hmm. then they're just bound to each other, and they kind of like that because they love each other, so they're happy. And yeah, that's a pretty quick synopsis of the book.
That was beautiful. That was very, very well done. We'd like to preface this now, our upcoming discussions, with the fact that Kalina and I have different opinions on this book, which is really interesting. She hates this book. She did not like it.
I don't like it. I don't hate it, but she didn't hate it. It's not my favorite.
I loved this book. I thought this was a much better book than the first one, mainly because I really like Anya. And I like Lucien too. I think he's a better demon than Maddox was, but I didn't like Maddox either because he was just so obsessive and just a little bit too crazy for me, and he was just,
He was intense, immediately intense over his possessiveness
of Ashlyn.
Ashlyn.
Yeah.
Still is in this book, too. He's straight up crazy.
Yeah. And we find out in this book that Ashlyn is pregnant.
Oh.
A couple of months pregnant with a demon-human hybrid.
Hybrid human-demon baby.
So, yeah. So, I don't remember later on in the other books how this baby turns out with the boy or girl. Maybe they don't even mention it. So, you know, if you guys are interested, feel free to read on.
Keep reading.
Just keep reading. The series is really good, and you find out throughout the rest of the series that Cronus is really going to be the main antagonist in this.
And another person.
Him and another god.
Another god. Remember...
the Hunters?
Yeah, the head of the Hunters.
The head of the Hunters, yeah.
Well, I don't want to spoil anything. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, and another thing, too, is, I mean, Anya is a virgin in this book, and we had a big problem with virgins in the first book. And this one, she is also...
Yeah.
A virgin.
But that's a really good starting point for part of my issue with not just this book, but generally speaking, the topic of virginity. And it's a social construct that has been used to control women.
Because
It's not a real thing. It's not something that, you know, there's not a line in the sand where you definitively cross and are a different person. You know, everyone's first time is going to be different. Everyone experiences that differently. And maybe it is a really, like, dramatic experience. And you do feel like now, oh, wow, I'm now a different person. But for most people, it's just a thing that happens. They go through it. You know, at some point, you make the decision. You do it. And you're not different. You're not, you know, you're the same as you were before. But for women, it's a real big deal, like, that you're still a virgin. Like, that's, you know, it's changing a little bit in society now. But for millennia, it's been a way of controlling women. You know, only the pure ones, only the virgins were, like, good marriageable stock. Because you could guarantee children were born of the, you know, father, I guess. Can't really guarantee, but whatever. So it's like a registry of, you know, like... possession. So, and it really can be shown between these two books if you look at Ashlyn and you look at Anya. Ashlyn was, in truth, the stereotypical idea of a virgin.
Yep.
She was an inexperienced innocent who had lived her life sheltered. She never really went on dates. She said she had a couple of dates, but no, they never went anywhere because she had that weird gift where she could hear people's conversation, and, you know, no one really liked that. She'd never experienced anything, and so she's really, like, what you would, you know, hold up as an ideal, if you're going to use the air quotes around the word ideal, I don't believe in it, but virgin. And then on the other hand, you have Anya, who is a technical virgin, if we're going to talk about it in this way. She can't have penetrative sex because she will lose her will. So she's guarded against that her whole life, but she isn't an innocent. She isn't, you know, a naive, inexperienced innocent. She's made out with men and, you know, had her fun and played her games. And she just has that one line she's never crossed because, you know, she was afraid of her curse. So to talk about them and use the same label, virgin, is really not an accurate thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And Anya is flirtatious. She's dabbled in a lot of different types of relationships, but she's never had a sexual one. We find out later in the book that she actually has never given a blowjob either, but she does, because at one point, Lucian's like, prove to me that you like me.
Yeah.
Because throughout this book, Lucian cannot believe that Anya is really interested in him. He's got these scars that he's given to himself. He's hurt himself. Because at one point, he was in love with
Mariah,
who's immortal.
Yeah.
And she ended up dying because she couldn't live forever, and he had to escort her soul to heaven, and that tore him apart. So he vowed that he would never fall in love again. So he pretty much scarred himself up and gave himself, he tried to make himself look as ugly as possible so that he could not fall into a situation like this. Well, little does he know that Anya is totally attracted to him. She thinks he's completely hot. And if he looks anything like the cover of the book, I think so too.
I mean, she is the goddess of anarchy, so it's like kind of an anarchical act for her to find something that would be typically unattractive attractive.
Yes.
Like, she's breaking the rules, you know, going against society's, you know, stereotypes, and she's like, sees this guy who's strong, who's dedicated to his fellow warriors. He, like, thinks of himself as the leader. I mean, he is kind of the de facto leader of them. He was when they were immortal gods before the demons, and he has been since. He kind of takes it upon himself to help them, and when they're in trouble, you know, try to lead them out of it. So he's a strong, dedicated, you know, kind man, and she finds that highly attractive. So she loves him, even though he is all scarred up and he's cut his face and is, you know, so he's dealing with self-esteem issues throughout this book.
Yeah, and he's like a burly dude that smells like flowers.
He does smell like flowers. Apparently death smells like roses.
He smells like a bunch of flowers. She calls him flowers throughout whole book. So, yeah, so he's reluctant to do that, mainly because, one, Cronus has told him that he has to go and kill this girl.
So if he allows himself to feel for her, he's going to have to kill her in the end. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I can't do that again. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I had to kill Mariah like 7 centuries ago, and I don't want to do it.
Yep. And we don't like killing girls, period.
No. Nope.
So,
the
wards,
they hate that.
This is how Anya actually gets introduced to them. I mean, she's actually... they're looking for them because she knows that these lords are after her to kill her because they were given the instructions by Cronus to kill her. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to do that. And I'm going to go find these guys and I'm going to fucking kill them myself. But she finds herself really intrigued and attracted to Lucien. So they go on this mission together and they're looking for these artifacts that Cronus is looking for.
Yeah.
And pretty much the whole time they're battling it out. And one of the reasons why I really like this book is Anya holds her own. She does a really good, she's taught herself how to fight. She's, you know, like Kalina said, she's, you know, self-defense and teaching herself that she needs to protect herself and stuff. She doesn't want to be just penetrated by any guy because she's gonna lose her will and belong to some person that probably won't have anything to do with her, and she's gonna have to live for the rest of her life like this.
Yeah.
So
she's a pretty big badass.
I mean,
she definitely holds her own when fighting Lucien, and she knows how to use weapons, and yeah, she's got a lot of skills. So she's a pretty cool character. She has a lot of powers as well, you know, being a goddess. So it's not always just fighting, but she uses her intelligence and, you know, outsmarts the lords a couple of different times. Mm-hmm. Outsmarts Lucien. She ends up, like, at one point kicking him into, like, the Arctic Ocean.
Yes.
as she right tricks in him cold. Into that. You know, there's that one chase scene where he's following her and she keeps flashing to places like a New York City street, mm-hmm. and then a gay strip club, and then, you know, he keeps getting, like, he doesn't know where she's going, so he's just following her, and he ends up in all these compromised positions, getting hit by cars, landing on dudes' laps, stuff like that.
It's pretty cool the way that she kind of set them up, though, because they both flash, so flashing is sort of like, for you Harry Potter reader out there, is like apparition. It's like you could just operate from here to here. It's a teleportation. So she hasn't ever been able to be followed before, but Lucien can follow her because he remembers that she smells like lollipop strawberry and creams.
Yeah.
Strawberry and cream lollipops. Yeah. Which she likes to steal because she's anarchy. She doesn't
gave herself away because she smells like these lollipops. And she's been following Lucien around secretly. She hasn't let him see her, but she's been following him around for like weeks. And so he knows when she's around based on this scent. So when she shows up and he finally sees her for the first time, he knows it's the same woman that's been following him because of the way she smells. Which, we got that in the first book with Ashlyn smelling like honey. And every time she like was anywhere, Maddox could smell her because she smelled like honey. And now Lucien can smell Anya. She smells like strawberries and cream. And I just am like, that's a really cute device that we're going to use throughout these books to, like, tell what people smell like, but it's stupid.
Stupid, and it doesn't work, right?
It doesn't fucking work. I spent probably 15 years trying to smell like oranges. Like, Bed Bath & Beyond, Orange Blossom was my spray. And when they, like, discontinued it, I got super sad and, like, went out and found a different spray that had, was orangey, Orange Blossom smell. My shampoo was orange. My soap was orange. I don't think a single person has ever commented that I smell like oranges.
I honestly have to say, for the 20 years I've known you, no, you do not.
I don't fucking smell like oranges.
Although I think that some people do have a distinct smell.
True.
When I used to go visit my family back in California, I think I came home smelling like mothballs and Tiger Balm.
Well, those are very strong scents, so I think if those rub off on you, yeah, you don't have a chance.
But those never stuck with me. I mean, like, they were there for a while, you know.
That's more like, if it gets on your clothes. No, I can see that. But it's still not the same as, like, a person. Like, okay, she at least eats the Anya at least eats the strawberry and cream popsicles or lollipops that are supposed to give her that scent. But Anya, or Ashlyn, doesn't wander around eating honey.
Well, no.
Like, she just smells like honey.
She'd be a disaster. Like, go wash your hair, dude.
Why do you smell like honey? Oh, so, it's a fun little cute literary device that's in these books. Like, it's a quick shorthand that the guys use, like, you know, they can tell each other's woman by what they smell like and shit like that. And I think there's something in it, there's some in that idea where a man is so attracted to your scent. But I do think that it's not real viable.
Yeah, yeah. We do have to keep in mind that these are fiction.
These are fiction. Oh, what? What? Demon-infested lords don't exist in Budapest?
Darn.
God damn it.
I was really, really
Heading that way.
So I'll tell you another reason why I really like this book, besides Anya. I like Lucien, too. I think he, for me, is very attractive. He's the more reticent of all of the lords. He stays quiet. He is the leader, but he fights for them, and they all love each other, and they, you know, they feel like everything that they have to do is for, you know, the purpose of their own and keeping good with their team and everything. So when they matched up with that other team, they all split up and decided to do different things. So Dan's pulling over and we're not quite sure why.
Oh, we are.
So we might have a pause in this cast.
Oh, shit.
And
balls.
Then, oh.
Oh. Then we all died.
And that was weird. All right.
Pause.
We will be right back.
I took my necklace off. Like, where'd that go?
Don't you hate that when you, like, take your jewelry off and then you can't ever remember that?
I realized if I get any sun, I didn't want a giant weird sun slot.
Because that actually happens to you a lot.
It has happened. So.
Phantom jewelry. We're recording now, by the way.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
So we're back on the road.
Yeah, we got twins needed to pee really bad.
The little children needed to potty.
When a 3.5-year-old tells you they need to potty,
you go.
You stop on the side of the road. But now my dog's got stickers on him, and I feel really bad. I'm so sorry, puppy dog.
Aww.
I'm sorry, Scotty.
He's sad. All right. Well,
I don't remember.
I think we finished up talking about scents. So that was good. And now you're going back and explaining why you like Lucien.
Yes. So he, I don't know. I guess it's because he's just, we know that he's strong and that he's got these powers to flash. And though he is, you know, a sad demon in a sense of, you know, being the demon of death, he has to go and escort souls and things.
He's very stoic because emotion doesn't work very well. He doesn't, he tries to put emotion off a lot of the time because it doesn't help him. He sees some awful things, you know, souls have to go to hell, some of them have to go to heaven, get to go, but every time he takes souls to heaven, he gets a little sad because he sees the beautiful, like, gates and the angels come to greet the soul, and he knows that that's a thing that he'll never get. He'll never have that peace and get to peacefully rest and go into heaven. So that, you know, makes him a little bit more melancholy. And so he's a pretty stoic. He tries hard to be the least emotional of the warriors. You know, Maddox with anger or violence is always, like, flying off the handle, beating shit up and, you know.
Yeah, you know, and as the leader, you do have to be the one that's most put together because, you know, you have followers that are looking to you to...
They when take you're a leader, their lead from you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be wild and crazy and keep those guys together for as many centuries as he has. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just like we're in this convoy right now, and if Dan happens to lose us, then we're sleeping on the fucking side of the road. Because
I don't know where the hell I'm going.
And this one man is traveling with two dogs, three cars, three women, and four kids. And it's quite amazing. He's an amazing man. So anyway, so the Anya is the complete opposite of Lucien. I think you know, maybe the opposites attract of that.
Yeah.
But she is flirtatious and she's mouthy and she's just like, I really don't give a shit. I really am anarchy and I'm gonna do whatever it is that I do. So at one point, as they're flashing to different places and stuff and he's trying to follow her, he realizes that she doesn't pay for the lollipops that she'd just stolen, and so he pays for them. And is that where people are looking at him all crazy?
That's part of it. That's one of the places. Yeah, so, you know, we mentioned that he's scarred. Well, that's fine. People have scars. We encounter them every day. But in this book, she writes him as if, like, every time he goes out into public, like, people are terrified of him. Ooh. And, like, children are pointing and women are cowering and everyone, like, backs away from him when he walks into this convenience store. And I'm just like, he's got some scars on his face. Is he, like, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't buy that. I'm like, yeah, he may be ugly and he may be scarred, but I just think people don't cower from people with deformities or you know.
No, not really. I mean, no. Anything. I mean, like, you don't point at a person in a handy or in a wheelchair.
No.
And say, oh,
I think we're a little bit better than that. I think that was a little shallow of a interpretation. Like,
yeah.
trying to extrapolate that he has these scars so no women would want to sleep with him. And then taking it to the next step of people are so scared of his scars and they find him so ugly they can't even be in a room with him. And you're mm-hmm. like, no, I don't think that's the case.
Yep.
So yep. That was a little forced for me.
So let me tell you guys the number one reason why I really like this book. And it is because of Anya. And the main reason why I like Anya is because she's a pretty strong character. And she has to live up to this reputation of being a slut and this whore and everything that everybody is, you know, telling her that she is, or, you know, thinking that she is, because her mother, Dysnomia, the goddess of lawlessness, you know, that's what she did. She slept around with other, you know, goddesses, men and other, you know, humans and things like that. So that's what she did. So unfortunately, Anya's got this, you know, reputation following her around and stuff like that too. So I'm just gonna make this a little bit personal, and it's not anything like that. My mother was not a whore, and neither was I. But I do have to say that from an early age, I have been, you know, within the confines of my family and stuff like that. I have always been the wild one. I've always been the girl that should not be around the other girls, and definitely not around any of the boys, because I was the one that always talked back. I had questions all the time. And it wasn't anything like, you know, I was being disobedient, you know, being raised in a Cambodian-American culture as a first-generation Cambodian-American was a little difficult for my parents. You know, they weren't super, super traditional in a way, but my aunts and my uncles were, and they had a lot of influence on us. So growing up, I was the kid that was bad, because I had boyfriends when I was a teenager. And while I did lose my virginity at an early age, I didn't actually really start having sex until I was about 16. And at that time, I was dating somebody that was, 2 years older than I, but we were together for about a year or two before we actually started having sex. Well, my aunts and my uncles and, you know, some of my family, my sister, actually, I know for sure my sister does. My oldest sister thought that, you know, we were having sexual activities with each other when in fact we weren't. And I didn't have to explain that to anybody, and I wasn't going to try, because I knew that they weren't going to believe me. So I had to live with that reputation of being the bad girl, the one that nobody should, you know, follow. Keep them away from your daughters. She's going to turn them into whores. She's never going to amount to anything in her life. You know, I never finished college. That doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me dumb. It just makes me bad at math. That's all it is. And you know what? I live a happy life. I have a beautiful family. My husband takes care of me. I have, you know, I have a lot of things that a lot of people don't have. And that's not because I'm better than anybody, but because I had to really work hard at believing in myself. So I was taught to be dumbed down as a woman, and then as an extra, a bad woman, because I did not do what I was told. So I think a lot of my closest friends and, you know, my closest cousins and, you know, they understand me, and they know that I don't live up to those reputations, because I'm not a bad person. And anybody and all of my aunts and my sister or whatever can think whatever they want to think when I was a 16-year-old. But I am who I am now because of how they treated me. And in a way, I can almost say thank you, because you guys made me feel, or at least tried to make me feel really, really bad about myself and for who I really wanted to be. And now I'm awesome. Like, I have the greatest friends. My family is awesome. My kids is awesome. My husband's, I mean, I've got it all. Even my dogs, he's got tons of stickers on him right now.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and so I can see why Anya would be a really important character for you, because she's, you know, her whole life, people think of her one way, and she knows in herself, who she really is, and she's not going to change the way she lives her life. Once when they're like kind of discussing her childhood, she tried. She did try as a young goddess to be meek and quiet because she knew what people were assuming about her because of her mother, and it wasn't working. People still were teasing her and calling her names, and Dysnomia, her mother, took her aside one day and was like, you can only be who you are. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very valuable lesson, because if you're trying to live your life up to what other people think about you, or even what other people say the way you should live your life, that's not going to be a satisfactory way to live for very long. And the best thing to do is to just figure out who you are inside and then live the world, you know, that way. Mm-hmm. So Anya does teach us that, and she does provide that in this story, and I think that is important. She is good. I do like her as a character.
Yeah, yeah, and she's fun. I love all the fight scenes that are happening between her and Lucien and these, and how they flash and just, like, I mean, they're going at each other. When they're doing this, I'm thinking of Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, yeah,
but they're
just,
like, totally kicking the shit out of each other, and then, like...
Well, Lucien's pulling his punches the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little bit fighting her, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Because he doesn't
She's kicking his ass.
Yeah.
She takes these chains that are completely unbreakable at one point and, like, breaks him and ties him to the bed with the chains right, like, after they've been pretty intimate with each other, and leaves him there, like, naked and aroused just so that his friend can find him.
Yeah, and he does say, no chains can hold me, when in fact these ones are not. So, just so you guys know, we are doing another stop, so I know it's not, we can change all this in the recording, but please bear with us. All right, we are back again. We are so, so sorry about all of the interruptions. That was another pit stop we had to make, but we are on a straight route now, and we should be getting to where we're going soon.
Okay.
So.
So, yeah. So you've...
I don't remember what we last talked about.
You like the book. I don't dislike the book. I just wanted to say that I was bored through a lot of the book. So I read these books because they're sexy, and I like to, you know, I think that they hang on their... in the interactions between the characters and their romantic scenes. This book doesn't have all that many, and they're pretty far spread out. So the first one, you know, they have a pretty hot, intense kiss right in the beginning. Anya and Lucien, like, they meet in the club in Budapest, and she's all like, come dance with me, and he's like, no. And he says just like that, no. And then she makes him kiss her, and it's really intense, and it's a real nice kiss scene, and that happens within the first, you know, handful of pages of the book, and it's great. And then it is over 12 chapters later before we get to anything else, even remotely sexy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the whole time I'm just like, where is this book? It's so slow.
Yes.
There's just a lot of chasing, and I know there's, like, that should have been building up a lot of tension and stuff, but it didn't for me. I thought that there were too many obstacles. Like, everything got placed in between these two characters. We have the curse. We have Cronus. We have Lucien's self-esteem problems. We have, like, all this stuff kept, like, now there's, you know, finding the cage, and they're lying to each other, and this and that. And it's just all these things that seemed insurmountable before they finally just... surmount them all. They just are like, man, we got this, let's move on. And so I was a little bit bored through most of the book because I was like, where are my sex scenes?
That is true, and I do agree with you in that part. There was a lot of just stale moments of not getting into anything real naughty, of course. But she does touch base on a lot of that's going on in the story, because she does you know, sort of talk about what some of the other lords are doing too. She talks about Paris for a little bit, and he's caught in some type of action that's happening in the Americas. I don't remember which country or state he was in, but, you know.
No, he gets caught in Greece.
Oh, I thought it was up here.
Yeah, he gets caught by the hunters in Greece. No, he's on his way to America. They're searching for the eye in America.
Okay.
But he doesn't make it.
Which is one of the artifacts. Yeah, and, you know, he's losing his powers because he hasn't had sex in a really long time.
Well, that's kind of the denouement of the book, is Cronus realizes that Lucian's not following his instructions. Lucian's not going to kill Anya.
Right.
So then he's like, I'm going to take it out on your guys. So he puts Paris in a position where no one will sleep with him. Well, that's like pain and suffering to him because he's the houser of promiscuity. So he gets really, he starts getting sick. And Lucian doesn't know any of this, so it's not really helpful because it's not putting pressure on Lucian. But, you know, Cronus starts realizing he has to use the other guys to get at Lucian.
Yeah.
And then that still doesn't work. He realizes he has to use Lucian to get at Anya. So that's when he starts making Lucian suffer and weaken and almost die until Anya gives up the key voluntarily.
And so he's dying while they're battling these,
the Hydra.
The Hydras that are protecting all of these artifacts that are around the world. So they find the one Hydra with another warrior of some sort. He's not part of the... His name is William. He's not part of the any like, of the Lord's groups or anything like that.
Anya's he's just friend.
Yeah.
He's an immortal and we don't know much about him. He's just a friend of Anya's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the book, it's not bad, but it's not... It really wasn't my favorite. I at least liked how, you know, I liked the flow of the story better in the first book. I don't necessarily like the story itself better.
Yeah. Well, I could see that. I guess that's where we differ. I really like the story because there's action in it and she's, you know, they're battling all the time and stuff like that. But there is the lack of sex, which is what we're fucking talking about.
We're talking about the sexy.
This is the whole reason why we're doing this. Is this. But we do learn that Anya has never given a blowjob before, so she does.
That scene was horribly awkward.
That was an awkward scene, because that's when Lucian actually, and he wasn't expecting it, but he, on purpose, was trying to, he wanted to be a D-bag. He's like, I need you to prove to me that you're not just fucking with my feelings, and that you actually do like me, because no woman can like me. Look at me. I am a hideous beast. Yeah. And she's like, okay, but I do fucking like you. And he's like, okay, suck my cock. That's exactly how he says it.
Yeah, he said it real aggressively, and he said it with the intent that she would be disgusted and leave, and that he would have his point proven to himself, but instead she just was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it, and he's like, no, oh, shit, no, because then it felt really like it wasn't loving and sexy, it was now like almost forced and dirty, it was really, it was uncomfortable. For everyone involved, including the reader.
And at this point in this scene, he doesn't know about her curse yet. He doesn't find out until a little bit later.
He doesn't. That's why he's questioning why. Because she says she won't take any of her clothes off. And he's like, and that's the last straw for him. He's like, you are fucking with, you are toying with me. You're kissing me and we're making out. And you say all these things. And then you won't take your clothes off. So you are teasing me. And then eventually, I think, she tells him.
She does eventually tell him when their feelings start to grow a little bit stronger. But she.
I want to say it's in this scene though.
I don't think so. I think isn't it a little bit later?
No, I think it's here. Because I don't think she can get away from this without telling him. I think she does it, and he's all embarrassed, and he's like, "You didn't have to do that. I wish you hadn't done that."
Because they had flashed back to.
They're at the house in Greece.
Yeah,
and then. She tells him. And he gets all, like, emotional about it.
Yes.
Because he realizes he spent the past, like, you know, 2 days or whatever calling her a slut and calling her bad names. And she didn't deserve any of it. So he gets real sad about that. I don't know. It was, like, that's the funny part. Because at the end of that, that's where she leaves him handcuffed to the bed, naked and aroused, and Strider walks in and is like, and she leaves it, she just leaves, and Strider comes in and is like, what's going on? And Lucian's all like,
I'm fine, dude, just
leave me alone.
Just go, we're all good.
And Strider's like, no, I think I'm gonna stay. I'm gonna take a picture of this, send it to all the dudes. So that was a funny part, I really appreciated that. I like some of the subtle humor that's in some of these books. Because some of the warriors, I think that's probably another piece of it, is Lucian's not funny.
Right.
Like, so he's not, to me, like, yeah, he's a good guy, but he's not that entertaining to me because he's not quirky and funny and, like, quick. At least in the first book, Mannix isn't any of those things either, but we were spending more time with the other lords in the first book, and Torin's really funny, and sometimes even, you know, Aaron and Reyes and Paris, they can be funny, and the other lords. So we had a little bit more humor. There was more interactions between everyone else, except for not just these two characters. The downside to this book is both of them have the power to flash, so they can go anywhere they want. They spend the whole book chasing each other around the world, avoiding everyone else, avoiding their friends, because they're in the middle of dealing with all this crap, and they don't want, you know, Lucien doesn't want the guys to know about this, and they, like, they already are gigging him about Anya, and he's like, leave me alone. So I think that's what we missed in this book. That's why it was a little bit more boring. Not just the, you know, long spread out, you know, bits between sex scenes, but also just the interaction of the friends, of the lords that have lived together for centuries, millennia, and are fun. They're fun guys who make fun of each other. Like, Lucien's so serious. And without the guys kind of around to mock him, it's just a book about a serious dude being, like, self-deprecating and emotionally, like, unstable.
He does throw a big pity party about himself.
Oh, my God.
Book, which is annoying. I get that. Maybe, I mean, I like Lucien as a warrior and the type of, I guess, the man that he is. But I think mostly that's, Anya is probably the reason why.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some annoying aspects of her, too. You know, she does, you know, sometimes pick silly fights and says silly things and stuff like that, you know? Like, didn't you have a problem, like, with one of the...
Yeah, so in one of the scenes, they go, you know, they go and they just kind of barge into William's house, and Anya and Lucien show up. William greets him, brings him inside, and they're kind of talking for a while, and then two women appear from his bedroom, and they're, like, giggling, and they're like, come back to bed, William, and it's whatever, you know, they showed up at his house in the middle of the night, whatever, it's like, he's doing what he wants to do, right? Grown, consenting adults.
Yes.
But in her own mind, Anya makes a point of going, giggling, I'd never demean myself by giggling, I may talk like a sorority girl, but I don't giggle. And that pissed me off, because I was like, first off, bitch, you came and interrupted their lovemaking session.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fair.
They were minding their own goddamn business,
doing what they wanted to do.
Yes.
And you bust down the door and, like, interrupt everything. And then you throw shade at them because they happen to giggle. It's one of those things where women tear each other down for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, kind of always, like, pitted against each other as women sometimes. And like, oh, this is the right kind of woman to be. Or you don't want to be seen as this. You know, you don't want to be seen as a valley girl woman or a sorority sister or a, you know, someone who giggles. Or, I don't know.
She wouldn't like us very much.
I think she'd hate us.
She'd fucking hate us.
But that's not cool, Anya. Because
we are kind of cool.
She's fine, and she's typically, this is really the only moment. I mean, she has self-doubt sometimes about Lucien. I think it stems from her curse and stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, she's a pretty self-assured character. And so it's kind of out of character for her to have this, like, unexpected snipe session against these two girls who have done nothing to her,
mm-hmm.
aren't even fucking talking to her. They just come down and are looking for William and they giggle. And so I'd like women, and especially because I think these books are mostly written for women. I know anyone can read them, and more power to anyone who does read them, but they're kind of written by women for women. I think we need to hold ourselves up better and just, like, there's no need for her. They weren't competing for anyone.
No.
You know, they weren't after Lucien. They didn't even know he was in the house. So we don't need to attack each other. We need to be, like,
friends.
Hold each other's up, you know, and support each other.
Right.
And so
encourage
it was just, and it's such a small piece. It's just, and it's only internal into her own mind, but it was unnecessary. And I'd like to see my female characters have more strength of self than that.
Yeah.
Where they don't need to attack other women, just
a little bit more camaraderie and say, hey, you know, if that's how you guys are gonna roll, sure.
You giggle.
You guys are into those.
Giggle.
Giggle all you want.
Turns out they're vampires anyway, so really you wanna pick a fight with a vampire over giggling?
Totally missed that part. They're vampires?
Yeah, they're vampires.
Whoa!
They just call them vamps, and so I think it was easy to overlook.
Totally.
Because they actually made a play on that word at one point, because I forget what, whatever, it doesn't, it's such a small part, but yeah, they're like, oh, you know, and he turns out he's not bit. He's like, oh, nowhere you can see. Like, the next morning or
so
whatever.
So then does that mean warriors or whatever the hell William is, are they immune?
I think so, they're immortal. I think immortality grants you a certain level of immunity to other curse, like
other
things.
Types of
immortal.
Well, I mean, lords can't turn someone else into a lord by biting them.
No.
They could be like lord vamps. Lords.
That'd be weird.
That would be weird.
Yeah, it does seem like this world has all kinds of social, or not social, paranormal beings in it. Like, Ashlyn talked about a couple of them in the other book.
Yeah,
she would go and find, you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So, on the whole, what else? What else? Do we have anything else about the book?
I'd like to touch back from the first podcast that we made and just let you guys know that we looked up Din Nunyak, couldn't find a damn thing. I think mainly because we listened to this book and we don't know how to fucking spell it.
We can't spell
it. And I know you read it a long time ago.
I know, I did. It was 10 years ago.
Please, if anybody knows how to fucking spell it, just tell us.
Din Nunyak.
Or then let us know what it is.
What else?
Also, I totally looked up the slants because we're going to, in a little bit here, talk about words that, you know, that are, I mean, they don't offend me, but that are just kind of like,
a lot of words piss me.
Yeah.
I don't like words, apparently.
But, I YouTube the Slants, and, they are awesome. I love their songs. I love their videos.
That was the band, we talked about in the first episode.
Yes.
Who just won the right to call themselves that.
Yes.
They weren't allowed to for a while or something. They had to take the case to the courts because
right.
They were like, we're all Asian, we want to call ourselves
like,
the Slants.
This
we
is
get
derogatory.
To.
We're like, yeah, but that's us. And I mean, aside from their name, which I think is awesome, by the way, they have good music and I'm actually going to start following them and listening to them. So power to you guys. That's so awesome. So back to the words. Penetrate.
Oh, terrible word. And they use it all the fucking time in this book because Anya can't be penetrated.
Don't penetrate me. The Lucian says it a lot.
I won't penetrate. Once he finds out about the curse, they decide there's a lot of other things they can do. He can still pleasure her and everything, but he just like keeps promising he won't penetrate her. And yeah, that's a disturbing sentence that he says a lot during sex. And I'd be like, meh. If I was...
That's another thing that they did, like, throughout this whole book, when they're making out. They're, like, making out and having full-on conversations.
Yeah, they talk
like,
a lot.
Talking.
They talk a lot during sex and during kiss scenes, and I'm like, this is unnecessary.
Why? Like, just fuck.
Just and, like, fuck.
I don't really want to hear you talking right now.
Uh-uh. Hey, we are making out, and when you start talking, it just is weird. Yeah, they're pretty. Oh, I remember what the fucking hickey scene.
Oh yes.
So Lucian gets all fucking like male crazy.
That's when he does get a little possessive.
He's like, they meet William, and she and William are like, they obviously have been friends for a long time and have this cute little like flirty thing going on, and he doesn't know. I mean, he knows about her curse, but he's not sure if she's still like just. You know, ever had a thing with William, and she says no, and William says no, but he gets all possessive and is like, I'm gonna mark her, I'm gonna make her mine, and so he takes her into the bedroom, and he, like, gives her this giant hickey right in the fucking center of her throat. He, like, sucks until she's bruised, and I'm like, fuck, you're, like, that sucks so much.
You're not 14.
Right, this is my point. I am a grown-ass woman, and I deal with bruising issues all the time anyway.
It's true.
So, unfortunately, that does make certain things just out of bounds. Like, you have to put halts. Like, you can be getting intimate, things can be going really good, and they can feel great, but all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, oh, you're going to leave a giant mark on me, and I don't want to walk around the next 2 weeks looking crazy. Looking like someone fucking strangled me or took a baseball bat to my neck. So
it's true.
We got to back off.
At any point in time, you can walk in my house, and you've got 7 different bruises, and you're like,
I
did was get into my car and go to your house.
I don't ever know where
I
they
I have
go.
No idea where these came
I
from.
I bruise very easily. It's a real problem for me. So hickeys have been a they've actually been a thing I've been aware of from a very early age and that I've had to prevent because I do think there's something, it's such a personal act, and then to be wearing it openly and visibly for the next couple
of weeks
it's, for me, that's too much. That's inviting too many conversations that I don't want to have with people who I'm not that close to.
Well, and especially as a 30-year-old woman.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, no, you just...
No.
We have way past our rite of passage.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to do that kind of thing anymore.
Yeah. Hippies are really a young person's game. They're a teenage game. It's like some kind of... You know, like, ooh, look, I gave my girlfriend this giant hit, like, at school and whatever. But I strongly advise, you know, hey, do what you do. But I just thought it was weird that he's, like, giving this grown woman a giant hickey in the middle of her, too. The middle of her chest.
Yeah, that's...
I was also... I was a little upset by the placement on that one. I was like, oh, just mark her on her, like, side or something. I don't know. Something less obvious. Because otherwise, you got to wear a scarf.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking summer, it's 90 degrees out, and I've got a scarf around my neck. You know I've got it, and I'm embarrassed as fuck by it.
Every time you walk in my house with this scarf, I'm going to look under your neck to see if there's a hickey.
No, that will be the only reason. I'll be like, shit, now I've got to wear a scarf.
No, I've got some explaining to do.
I had an issue with that. It's just like, come on, guys. Also... Anya's fucking immortal. They heal, like, immediately. Why on earth am I to believe she has that bruise the next day?
That's
which was
true.
The whole point. He wanted to show it off to William and be like, haha, she's mine.
Did he actually see it?
Yeah. They talked about it the next morning. And I was like, no. She's immortal. That thing had gone away already.
Oh my god.
Don't give hickeys to grown women.
Was this when they flashed back to William's house after they were fighting with William? Not fighting.
No, this is before they ever started.
See, it was
a lot.
Lost.
I know.
There was a lot going along. And there was a lot of nothing going
on. Well, yeah, because they went to his house and then they went on their quest and then at one point they flash back to his house and then they go back on their quest. And it's just a lot of back and forth for no real discernible reasons.
Yeah.
And at one point, I did lose track of where William even was because he can't flash and nobody can flash him. So he wasn't with them, but then they went and found him again. I don't know. That's weird.
He ends up betraying them.
Yeah.
Anya takes a book from him.
Yeah. He hangs around. I think he's around in the next couple of books.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
All in all, they end up, you know, getting together and,
They're mated for life.
They're mated for life. Lucien finally gets to penetrate her, and it's, you know, world rocking. They love each other.
It actually didn't seem all that great.
No, it wasn't. Okay, yes. Okay, I'm starting to understand why you're not liking these books, especially for the reasons that we are reading these books. I get it. We're here to talk about sex, to talk about the nitty-gritty, the dirty shit that happens. And this one wasn't as dirty as Ashlyn and Maddox.
And Maddox.
Yeah. I do
I don't know. I mean, it's written by the same author. You'd think she'd write the sex scenes the same way, or at least similarly.
Yeah.
But no, I was much more aroused by the first book sex
That's
scenes.
True.
And this book sex scenes, I was just like, I was put off a lot by their conversations, I think.
They talked a lot.
And I was
They talked a lot. And then they did a lot of just like flashing here and there. But there were a lot of storyline, though. I think that, you know, the first book did a lot of introductions to, you know, what this world is about, that they're, you know, these lords are being hunted by hunters and all of this stuff. They barely touch on Cronus and everything, but they do touch on Cronus a lot in this book and don't talk about the hunters as much. Well, Paris's little part does.
Yeah.
Because he gets captured and everything. And you know, Paris's story is actually a little interesting. He finally does get to have sex with the girl who lures him and entraps
Sienna.
You know, she kind of like, it's not a spell, they don't have any magical powers, but she's like, okay, and then she like, you know, does him, he gets his energy back, he gets his powers back, but then she dies, she gets killed, and Paris's curse is promiscuity, so he is not supposed to be able to have feelings or really sleep with the same woman more than once.
No, he can never get aroused for the same person more than once.
Well, yeah, but he does for Sienna, but he can't do anything about it because she's fucking dead.
She dies.
Which is sad story.
That drags on for a couple more books because he gets real mopey.
He does, and I always felt like he was like the more fun one. Maybe it's because he gets to fuck a lot. I don't know.
I guess. We just don't get it. We're not introduced to him a lot.
No.
Because it's not his story for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, sexy scenes.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, that's about
that's it.
That's it. Yeah. Did we have any other topics you wanted to touch on? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I think we caught them all. All in all, girls, be nice to other girls.
We
stick together.
Virginity is a dumb social construct that we need to fight against until no one believes it's a thing anymore.
And if anybody ever makes you feel bad about yourself, fuck them.
Fuck them.
Go do what you do.
You do you, girl.
Yeah. You totally do you. Or boy.
And guy.
Yeah.
You do you, too.
Whatever you identify
or
as.
Or self-identify.
Whatever you'd like to consider yourself.
Yeah. Whatever. You just be you.
So, yeah. So, on to our next book.
Yes. We're going to move off of the series. It's a great series, and we might even come back to it in the future. We're not quite sure, but for now, we thought we'd want to try some different authors, kind of talk about them and how they're, you know, they construct their characters. And so we're actually going to do a book that's a compilation of four short stories next. The title of the book is called Inked, and I do not remember the four authors that are involved in it.
Yes, I do not either.
But yeah, it's called Inked, and it has four short stories in it, all revolving around tattoos and hot, sexy ink.
Yeah.
Which I find super attractive, so I'm really excited. And the tie-in goes back to the lords, because they all are tattooed with the butterflies from where the demons enter them. So we're like kind of taking that little thread and going forward into new books, all focusing on tattoos and hot supernatural sex.
They are. Yeah. I do have to say, I have started this book, and I am, you know, reading in into it a little bit. So I'm interested in to see how much more it is, because I'm in a couple of chapters already, and I haven't gotten one nipple twinge.
No!
I haven't gotten...
No coochie twinge.
No coochie twinge. I haven't, you know, gotten excited.
Shit.
Nothing. So, yeah, but you know what? We're continuing.
It's very early days, guys.
It is very early days. And for all we know, we'll start the next cast as something else. But, you know, thank you for joining us again. Sorry about all the interruptions. We are actually...
yeah, hanging with us on our road trip podcast. Yeah.
So the background noise, the rain, all of the potty break interruptions.
Traffic issues.
Yes, yeah, but it's been fun, so...
It's been a good time.
Yeah.
Have fun. All right. All right.
We'll see you guys next time.
See you next time.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode with some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy and wonderful introduction.